Good morning to you if you're watching online. How many of you were here at the Carols at Coastline last week? Just raise your hand. There was over 650 people that attended on Saturday and Sunday, and I wanted to make a public thank you, really, to Hannah Marie and Michaela, who basically led all of the team. So why don't we just publicly thank them? So much goes on. There's so many people involved. It was just an incredible weekend. A number of people gave their life to Jesus for the first time. Super exciting. Okay, so we are continuing our Advent series, and I want to kick off this morning with doing some Christmas trivia, okay? How well do you know the Christmas story? Like, some of you are like, I've been a Christian for years and years and years, so I'm going to be good at this. And maybe there are others of you, maybe you're not even following Jesus, you're not a Christian, but you do know the Christmas story. You're like, I'm sure I know some of this. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you a question, and then I'm going to give you some of the answers. They're going to come up on the screen. And then at the end of the question and the answers, you can tell me what you think the answer is, okay? Here we go. Number one, what does the Bible say the innkeeper said to Mary and Joseph? Was it A, there's no room at the inn? B, I have a stable you can use? C, come back later and I should have some vacancies? And D, none of the above? Come on, give me A, B, C, D. Huh? A, C. The answer is D. None of the above. The Bible doesn't mention an innkeeper. In fact, the inn was probably a guest house, and it was probably owned by Joseph or Mary's relatives. The innkeeper didn't say anything because there wasn't one. Right, question number two. According to the Bible, how did Mary and Joseph get to Bethlehem? Here we go. Was it A, a camel? B, a donkey? C, they walked? D, Joseph walked and Mary rode on a donkey? E, scooter? You like that one, eh? And F, who knows? So, come on, shout out. E, D. Yes, yes, yes. The answer is F. Who knows? I heard that. The Bible doesn't actually say. I know all the pictures that you've seen are of Joseph walking Mary on a donkey, but the Bible doesn't actually say how they got there. So who knows? Who knows? Okay, question number three. How many angels spoke to the shepherds? Was it one? Was it A, one? Was it B, three? Was it C, a multitude? Or was it D, none of the above? C, B. Some of you are in the first gathering. Don't cheat. The answer is A. Only one angel spoke to the shepherds, and then a multitude of heavenly hosts showed up. Luke 2, verse 10. Check it out. Okay, question four. What did the angels say or sing? Was it A, glory to God in the highest? B, hallelujah? C, unto us a child is born? D, joy to the world? Or E, glory to the newborn king? A, B, C, D, E. Huh? Well done, well done. It was A, glory to God in the highest. Question five, what is a heavenly host? Is it A, an angel at the gate of heaven? Is it B, the angel who heads up hospitality in heaven? Thought that was a good one. C, a huge angel choir? D, an angel army? Or E, none of the above? A, B, C, D, E. Huh? E, you're all saying E. D is the correct answer, an angel army. The word host in Greek means army. So it's a multitude of the heavenly host, a multitude of heavenly army. Okay, question six, last one, and you should know this if you were here last week at the family carols. The wise men brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. What is myrrh? A, Middle Eastern money. B, a drink. C, an easily shaped metal. D, a spice used for burying people. Or E, none of the above. Yes, you were right. It's a spice used for burying people. In fact, when Jesus was buried after his crucifixion, the scriptures say that he was anointed with 34 kilos of myrrh and aloe. The gift of myrrh was actually a prophetic gift, wasn't it, relating to Jesus' death. If you're here today and you're new to faith, or you're not yet a Christian, and you think, oh, these Christians know so much about the Bible, well, obviously they don't, do they? So you are in good company. Look, I'd say it doesn't matter that we know all the facts about Christmas, but what is crucial is we know why Christmas matters. Now, being in the right place at the right time, I believe, can result in incredible things happening in our lives, right? Anyone got that kind of a story? I know for me, I was a bouncer at my sister's 16th birthday, and I met this gorgeous girl wearing a blonde wig. I was in the right place at the right time. I obviously didn't realize at the time that this person would have a dramatic effect on my life. And of course, that's where I met Alice, my wonderful wife. And we've been together for 22 years. We've been married for 17 of those 22. And we have three incredible children. Who'd have known I was in the right place at the right time? Another story of right place, right time, was I remember being a kid and we always used to go to a video shop. Does anyone know what videos are? Yes, a few of you nodding your heads. And I always used to put my bike on the window outside, and we could look in the reflection of the machine and we could see the bikes on the window. And I always used to put it in the most difficult gear so that if by chance anyone was going to jump on it, it would be quite hard to pedal off. Anyway, someone jumped on my bike, started hammering it off down the road. I ran out of the shop. I was running. I got closer and closer to them. The problem was, the closer I got, I could see that this guy was 6'5", and he was built like Arnie. And I'm thinking, if I catch up with this fella, I'm done for. Anyway, we got around the corner, and this police car literally just came flying around the corner. They jumped out, and they grabbed this guy, and they arrested him. For me, that police car was in the right place at the right time. And sadly for this guy, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, because the copper was literally in a traffic jam across the road and he saw everything that happened. I don't know, maybe some of you have been in the right place at the right time and you've landed a job. Maybe you've been in the right place at the right time and you've got a promotion. Maybe you met the person sitting next to you because you were in the right place at the right time. And you say, well, John, what does this have to do with the Christmas story? Did you know that the Christmas story is really the ultimate example of the right place at the right time? God showing up on planet Earth, right place, right time. And I love the way that the Apostle Paul described this in Galatians 4, verses 4 and 5. It says this: but when the set time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman under the law, to redeem those under the law, that we might receive adoption to sonship. At the right time, God came so that we could be free, but so that we could be ushered into the family of God as sons and of daughters. And today, December 24th, Christmas Eve 2023, I believe that you're here in the right place at the right time for God to speak to you by his Spirit and ultimately to change you. Now, we've read this passage a lot over the last few weeks through, you know, the Advent series and also the carol service. It's Luke 2 verses 1 to 7, but let me just read this to you again. It says this: in those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken of the entire Roman world. This was the first census that took place while Quirinius was governor of Syria. And everyone went to their own town to register. So Joseph also went up from the town of Nazareth to Galilee, to Judea, to Bethlehem, the town of David, because he belonged to the house and the line of David. He went there to register with Mary, who was pledged to be married to him and was expecting a child. While they were there, the time came for the baby to be born. She gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no guest room available for them. Did you notice in this story the different references to time and place? Bethlehem, Nazareth, Syria, Judea. The story of the birth of Jesus is about God coming. And as we listen to this story year on year, I think a lot of us think, well, it's just so far away. It's like in a galaxy far, far, far away. It's just so long ago. But when you think about it, it's only kind of about 28 generations ago, if everyone kind of lives to about 70. I mean, think about your dad, and then think about your granddad, and maybe your great-granddad. Well, that's three generations. Just go a few more, and then you come to Jesus. Jesus was alive on this earth, and it wasn't that long ago. This event actually happened in human history at a specific time in a specific location. Now, there are a number of biblical prophecies in the Old Testament talking about this event happening like hundreds of years before it actually happened. And I'm not going to go into all of that today. But what is important is that this happened in a place called Bethlehem. See, when we think about our world today, we often think about it in East and West, don't we? But back in biblical times, it was actually kind of flipped upside down. Not physically, but economically and socioeconomically. You literally had North and South. You had kind of Mesopotamia in the north, which was modern-day Iraq, and then you had Africa in the south, and everything was kind of on that axis. We had the main highway for the world, that's all the goods being transported in and out, right there, where all the communication would literally go north to south and south to north, right along, I haven't got a map, but I should have got a map, right along where the Mediterranean Sea is. And then right there is this tiny little country called Israel, which was the crossroads from north to south. And if you had a message that you wanted the whole earth to hear, you'd go to the crossroads of the world to get it out there, right? To get it out to the ends of the earth. Like God showed up at exactly the right place at exactly the right time. Now, in thinking about how incredible it was that God came at exactly the right time and exactly the right place, it just got me thinking generally about how things kind of work out better when they're in the right place. Like many of you, in our home, there is a place where our keys go. Have you got a place like that in your house? And of course, in the busyness of our day to day, my household definitely works better when the keys are where they're supposed to be. Of course, if they're not there, all chaos breaks loose. Things work better when they're in the right place. Now, on this Christmas Eve, I want to illustrate the importance of how life works out better when things are in the right place by using the nativity scene. I think we've got a picture that's going to come up on the screen. Now, this isn't my nativity scene. If you remember, this is Phil and Janita's. They showed it a couple of weeks ago. It's beautiful, a beautiful, beautiful scene. But just before I get into this, just a quick side note about the nativity. One of the things that fascinates me and amazes me is how Jesus brings together a crazy diverse bunch of people. Like the wise men and the shepherds and the animals and this young couple. And they're all there because of one central thing. This baby, Jesus. And this central one same thing is the thing that brings us all together here today. Just look around you at how diverse we all are. See, wherever we've come from, whatever age, ethnicity, race, background, whatever our story, we're all gathered here today because of Jesus. Because he is the reason for the season. We didn't gather here today because of me or because of the worship or the great biscuits. We came here today to celebrate Jesus coming to earth. Jesus is the center of Christmas. And of course, as you can see here, he is the center of the story of the Nativity. But in light of things being in the right place and life working better that way, I have one overarching question that I want you to ponder. What place does Jesus have in your nativity? Not the nativity like you've got at home as part of your Christmas decks, but what place does Jesus have in the nativity of your life? All too often, sadly, I come across people who relegate Jesus to the edges of the nativity of their lives. They kind of say, well, Jesus, you know, I want you to be in my life, but not in the center. Kind of, I want you to be kind of over there. Maybe as I said that, some of you, that resonates with you. Or maybe like me, it's just that over time, you've just found that there are different things that compete to be at the center of your life, of your story. So looking at the nativity of our lives, I would say that some of us, maybe we have put the shepherds at the center of our story. You know, the shepherds were out in the fields. They were hard workers, often working shift after shift after shift. So I'm going to say that the shepherds, if you like, represent our work. Now, for some of us, we probably didn't start out this way, but our work has kind of become the main thing in our lives. You find yourself spending more and more time at work. And I get it, right? Like, I understand, you know, we end up in the world of work and we have a passion for what we're doing and we're pursuing promotion and we're pursuing progression. And all of a sudden, we can find ourselves in a place where work becomes the main thing in our lives. And look, hear me. I want us to be fruitful in our work. But when our work is the center of our lives, life doesn't work the way it's supposed to. In fact, I would argue right now, maybe there is some tension in your life, and it's because work is at the center of your life, and it doesn't belong there. But maybe that's not the challenge for you, but maybe linked with work, you've put the wise men at the center of your story. Now, these guys were extremely wealthy. They were super successful. They were also adventurers. I mean, think about it. They dropped everything to go on a 2-year road trip to follow a star to find Jesus. For some of us, maybe the pursuit of wealth and success, or maybe even adventure, has become the center of our stories. We find ourselves chasing the idea of being successful. Maybe for some of us that comes from parents that had, you know, unrealistic expectations of us, and we still find ourselves trying to achieve some kind of approval. Look, a number of older, wealthy, and successful people that I know, as I've talked to them about this, they've told me in later life they wish they hadn't focused so much on wealth and success. And I've said, well, why is that? And they've said, because, John, it comes at a cost, and the greatest cost has been to those that they love. Some of my friends are divorced, some multiple times because of their pursuit for wealth and success. Some are estranged from their own children. But look, maybe it's not your career, it's not wealth, it's not success for you, but maybe it's likes and clicks. Maybe you're trying to build up some kind of image online, or maybe you're just spending money that you don't have to impress people that you don't really like. Wealth and success can become the center of our lives, and they don't belong there. Well, some of us may be tempted to put the animals at the center of our story. You say, John, what do the animals represent? Well, your animals. Like, they represent your pets. And I know, because I've looked, some of your pets have Instagram accounts with more followers than some celebrities I know. It's not that I hate animals. I love animals. But animals can for sure become the center. They can become kind of a distraction. But we get distracted by all kinds of things, don't we? All the latest stuff that's coming out, the latest gadgets, the latest tech, the latest fashion. And we all for sure get distracted from this thing constantly buzzing in our pockets, crying out for us to pay attention. But be honest with yourself. Has any of these kinds of distractions, or any others, there's loads, we could sit here all day talking about them, become the center of your story? At the end of our lives, maybe it's not work or wealth or success, but will we regret just how much time we've been distracted? When these distractions become the center of our life, life doesn't work the way it's supposed to. So what about Mary? I've got a picture of Mary here. I'm going to say that Mary represents our relationships, our family, our spouse, our kids, our boyfriend, our girlfriend. God gives us this gift of relationships. I mentioned this a few weeks ago in our marriage series. But when our relationships become the center, what tends to happen is we start to put expectations on each other that only God can meet. I mean, our families are great gifts from God, but they're terrible gods on their own. And maybe for some of us, the reason that some stuff is unraveling in our lives right now is because the wrong thing is in the center. Jesus has been put to the sidelines, to the periphery. The thing I see all the time is that people come to me, they get into difficult places when life isn't going right, and they say to me, "Where is God?" And often I say to them, "God's exactly where you've put him. He's like over there somewhere. He's distant." Look, for some of us, maybe it's none of the above. But maybe it's the star. And I'm going to say that the star represents all the worldly glitz and glamour, the hustle and bustle of consumerism over this period. Maybe you know, as I say this, you've been sucked into endless to-do lists, spending money that you don't have, sucked into this Xmas melee. This is Christmas without Christ. And that has become the center. And let me tell you, it doesn't belong there. Now, I'm not saying any of this, hear me, to shame anyone. I just want us to pause and be honest with ourselves. See, the most profound thing about the Christmas story is it's the exact opposite of all the other faiths and religions. All the other faiths and religions are about how do I get to God? And Christianity is all about God getting to us when we couldn't get to him. And you don't have to have your life all sorted in order for God to pursue you. At Christmas, God came to us. Romans 5 says, "Yet we were still sinners at the right time, before you and I had it all together. He came, and he longs to be at the center of our lives." Look, hear me right. I'm not saying there is anything wrong with working hard or being successful or wealth or having pets or a family or a husband, a wife, kids or a partner, or actually having a great Christmas with presents and all the family traditions that you have. But when any of this is at the center of our lives, it means that Jesus is on the sidelines and life doesn't work the way God intended it. There are so many things that compete to be at the center of our lives, but let me tell you, the only thing that belongs there is Jesus. I'll come into land with this. Jesus came and he said that he had come to establish a new kingdom, a new way of living. He literally turned the world upside down. He said things like, if you want to be something in life, you have to be willing to lose everything. He said, if you really want to matter in life, if you really want to be important, learn how to serve others. Jesus' message was so contrary to the culture then and is still so contrary to the culture today. He said in Matthew 6, verses 31 to 33, he said, "Therefore," listen to this, "don't be anxious saying, what shall we eat or what shall we drink or what shall we wear?" All the things that we so often worry about, right? "For the Gentiles seek after these things, and your heavenly Father, he knows you need them all. But look here, this is the verse. But seek first his kingdom and the king of the kingdom and his righteousness. He's saying, put me in the center. Seek me first and all these things will be given to you as well. If we get the order right, if we put Jesus first and center in our lives, he's going to take care of the rest. Now, look, that doesn't mean that we're not going to have problems. That doesn't mean that we're not going to go through hardships. And I know there are some of you here today, or maybe you're watching this online, and while everyone else seems to be happy and smiling and singing, you're feeling heavy. Maybe this Christmas for you is the first time that you've got an empty chair around the dinner table. We live in a fallen, broken world. So don't hear me say, if you put Jesus first and center, you're never going to have problems. But what you will experience is if that Jesus is in the right place in your life, you will never walk through any problems alone. You'll always have the guaranteed presence of God with you through whatever you go through. Let me ask you again. What place does Jesus have in the nativity of your life? Are you willing to put him first and center? What if this Christmas and into 2024, you made like a fresh commitment to put Jesus at the center of your lives? Look, I don't know what the journey of your life has been like so far, but I believe that God led you to this place at this time because he wanted to say to you, I want to be at the center of your lives. And maybe for some of you, you did give your life to Jesus at some point. You did put him at the center, but you've just realized the journey of life. Somehow he's found his way onto the sidelines. But the Lord would say to you today in love, come back to me. Put me at the center of your life. I mean, maybe you're here today and you've never given your life to Jesus. You've never put him at the center. Then we want to give you an opportunity just in a moment to do that. My prayer for all of us this Christmas is that Jesus would be first and center. He came to earth to meet with us at the right place, at the right time, that we might have close, intimate relationship with him in this season and all the seasons ahead. Merry Christmas, Coastline. Shall we stand?